Praise be to God. Thank you, Sandy. The Noah's Ark story is much beloved. Painted on nursery walls, shared with children on the laps of parents and grandparents, and transformed into toys of all kinds. Who can resist the crazy Noah and his family? The animals arriving two by two, the enormous wooden boat built on dry land, the raging storm and seas, and the symbols of dove, olive branch, and rainbow. I thought it a strange story at first as the point of reflection for this first Sunday in Lent. That is, until I delved more deeply into this first covenant that God makes with all creation, with us. So if you've ever spent time with young children, you know the storyline. Whether with blocks or train tracks or puzzles or sand, you'll build a masterpiece. And just as you add the finishing touch, great dinosaur hands or monster feet or giggling bodies destroy the tower, toppling and scattering the blocks in every direction. The sandcastle is smashed, seawater flooding the moats. Inevitably, the cries follow, "Again! Again!" There is delight in creating, and even more joy in wielding the power to destroy. I can't begin to tell you how many wooden train layouts or littlest pet shop villages I built in a week, powerless to the childhood glee. According to the book of Genesis, Creator God decides that the glorious creation of Earth as a whole, the land, plants, animals, humankind, all of it is corrupt, violent, and broken. God brought life out of chaos and nothingness, and creation seems determined to return to chaos and nothingness. In response, God intends to topple the tower, to stomp out the sandcastle, to tear up the tracks, and start over. This act is not with delight, but out of complete despair and grief. God resolves to destroy the destroyers with a flood. The sheer magnitude of the flood that covers the earth for as far as Noah and even the birds of the air can see lasts 40 days. Nothing remains but what Noah and his family has harbored on the boat that God had commanded them to build. The flood demonstrates God's power, complete dominion, as ultimate creator and destroyer. God alone determines who survives, the remnant of the original creation. All of creation is powerless, at the mercy of God. God decides to wipe the slate clean in one huge do-over. In the end, as the flood disperses and the ark is grounded, God declares the very first covenant between God and all creation. God says, "I will set up my covenant with you so that never again will all life be cut off by floodwaters. There will never again be a flood to destroy the earth." Through the narrative of Noah, the flood, and the covenant, we experience the relational nature of God. It is simple and profound. Let's examine three aspects of the covenant that reveal to us the nature of God. First, God creates. The covenant God makes is totally inclusive with all creation. Repeatedly, God expresses mercy and grace for every living being and for generations to come. God transcends all space and time. It's a reminder of the mutual connection that humans have with all life, the earth and the universe. What affects one affects all. Secondly, God protects life. See, God agrees to never destroy life again. And this is a surrendering of divine power and freedom. It's kind of like, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? Creator God embraces the role of protector and promises only that which is life-giving. Notice that the covenant is one-sided, asking nothing of creation in return. Instead, God promises to balance the corrupt, unharmonious ways of creation with mercy and grace. Creation is dependent on God, source of goodness and mercy, to restore life. And third, God reconciles. Above all else, God desires relationship with all creation. Accepting the limitations of creation and loving us without bounds to restore and redeem. See, God decides to remain one with a broken world. God knows what's going to happen. But God decides to share in its hope and disappointment, in its joy and suffering. Creator, protector, reconciler. This is the God of Noah, his family, and all the creatures that disembark onto a cleansed land, washed by the flood. They rest in the promise of God. And so we hear in the gathering of the clouds, like Sandy said, God displays a bow as a reminder of the covenant. So I know most of us think of that as a rainbow. The bow is really reference to a war bow. It's unstrung and pointing away from earth. And the bow is a reminder that God will never again wage war against creation. A God of do-overs remains steadfast as creator, protector, and reconciler of all life. God's covenant is one of peace and reciprocity. God says, let us not be at war. I need you. And we reply, I need you too. God says, let us serve one another such that life persists and flourishes. See, a new relationship is forged in this moment. A changed God who remains steadfast, covenant by covenant, in a grace-filled pursuit to redeem and restore creation. So how then are we called to respond to God's covenant, a profound act of grace and mercy? So Lent itself recognizes the imbalance that God saw when he set out to destroy all creation with a flood. Like the merciful God who chooses to journey with us through our violence and brokenness, Lent offers us an opportunity to reflect and restore our relationships with God, with others, and with creation. You might even say that this can be our own time for do-overs, resting in this promise of God to remain with us in and through all things. So, who ate a fasnet on Tuesday? Right, this fried donut is traditionally served the day before Lent starts. So one of the spiritual disciplines practiced during Lent is fasting. And this is often interpreted as giving up sweet foods like chocolate, ice cream, and donuts. There's a deeper purpose behind a fast, though, than just sacrificing something that you like, something tasty and good. Fasting is a spiritual practice that challenges us to establish balance in our lives. It opens a space of reflection through which you can explore how something impacts your life and others. So in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, Robin Wall Kimmerer reflects on the disappearance of sweetgrass, an imbalance of great concern. See, according to a Native American spiritual tradition, of all the plants, sweetgrass was the very first to grow. So sweetgrass is a ceremonial plant cherished by many indigenous nations. One of her graduate students, Lori, wondered if different ways of harvesting sweetgrass is causing its disappearance. So Lori compared two methods. One method, people are harvesting half of the stems in a plot of sweetgrass. And in the second method, they're not harvesting the sweetgrass at all. What she discovers is that the unharvested plots experience the most harm. They are unhealthy and propagating less sweetgrass. The actual act of harvesting thinned populations that the freed space and light permitted more growth. So the current places where sweetgrass continues to thrive are actually located near native communities known for sweetgrass basketry. See, they're harvesting. The conclusion is clear. There is a relationship between plants and humans, one that is reciprocal. Kimmerer writes, "With their tobacco and their thanks, our people say to the sweetgrass, 'I need you.' And by its renewal after picking, the grass says to the people, 'I need you too.' Isn't this the lesson of grass? Through reciprocity, the gift is replenished. All of our flourishing is mutual." What I find interesting is that actually by abstaining from harvesting, Lori gains a deeper understanding of sweetgrass such that human practices can protect it and ensure that sweetgrass flourishes. So how is it that we can examine the impact of what we do in our daily lives and seek to nurture a balance in the unharmonious ways of humanity? Fasting is a spiritual discipline that fosters this intimate knowing of our relationships with people and creation. Abstaining from an important part of your life creates a combined sense of both absence but also freedom. As we explore what it means to not have it in our lives, we see its benefits and we also see ways of harm more clearly. Oftentimes, we are open to deeper levels of compassion and connection with others that help us in turn create a better balance in our life and in our world. So here are a few examples to help you understand how it works. So imagine driving past the Starbucks and forego the expense of coffee. Meanwhile, pray for people battling with drug addictions. Maybe save the $4 or $5 that you get that you pay for a coffee and offer that up to help somebody. Imagine turning down the temperature in your home. Reduce your consumption of cost and energy, and consider lives of people without adequate heat. You can think of Texans. Meanwhile, purchase blankets for a local shelter. Abstain from social media. Now there's a life change, right? Commit the time saved to calling members in nursing homes or praying with those who are sick in a different kind of connection. So by discovering the benefits and the drawbacks of that which is lost and gained, you can often move to a place of greater balance in your life and in your relationship with others. Through fasting, we find ourselves changed, broken open by understanding how choices and ways of living are beneficial, harmful, and always open for a do-over. This is why we need Noah and the ark to start us on this journey. Yes, God knows the depth of our brokenness. God chooses not to destroy it all and surrender this divine power and freedom. God gives it up. God promises never to wage war against creation again. The rainbow in the sky is witness to that beautiful love of a God who creates, protects life, and reconciles. Even though God never demands anything in return, we discover that God and creation are united, bound in God's covenant. Amen. Let us be blessed by more music by Jim and Carol Adams.